Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Are you going to stand up for what you believe, or are you going to compromise that to win Miss USA?
The president is somebody who prays each and every day, whether it's National Prayer Day or not.
Protect the dignity of every human person, the sanctity of human life from the tiny baby in the womb.
Hold up your Bible. Say it like you mean it. This is my Bible. I am what it says I am. I have what it says I have. I can do what it says I can do. I will never be the same. God bless you.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Well, it's always good to remember the saints that have gone before us, be they the biblical saints, Old Testament and New Testament. Those are the ones we remember most often and most fondly in the church. And then there are the saints closer to the apostolic era, the early church. They're kind of on a second tier, but somewhere up the bleachers near the back, but still in the show, are the saints of more recent memory, be it the 16th century, or perhaps even the 19th century, or even our time. All Christians who die in Christ are regarded as saints. Even before they die, they're regarded as saints, but especially after they die, we remember them as those upon whose shoulders we stand theologically. We're going to do a little bit of that here in the first half hour or so of Issues, etc. Three to remember. A 16th century ruler, Frederick the Wise, near and dear to Luther's heart during the 16th century Reformation. We'll jump forward to the 19th century. Remember two giants of Lutheran memory, a pastor and missionary, Friedrich Wieneken, and father of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, if you can call him that, C.F.W. Walther. Dr. Martin Noland will be our guest here for the first 40 minutes of the program. He's past president of Concordia Historical Institute. After that 40 minutes talking about these saints of old, we'll spend part of this Tuesday first hour with some audio open lines. There are some recent statements made by Bishop Gene Robinson, first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA, about same-sex marriage. He's hopeful. He's optimistic. He thinks it's inevitable, not only in the United States, but also in his own church body. We'll talk in the second hour with Dr. T. David Gordon. He's author of a new book called Why Johnny Can't Preach. Very interesting book. It's about the media's influence on the messengers. We'll talk about the media and modern preaching in the second hour of the program. We'll spend the last half hour with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service. He writes a column on religion. We'll talk to him about several issues. Forthcoming movie from Dan Brown, Angels and Demons, the Church and the Media, and we'll talk about, spirituality in the Baptist Church with him as well, and some renegade nuns who've moved beyond Jesus. That's the last half hour of Issues, etc. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Noland is past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be here.
We hear a lot about the theologians, the pastors, the university professors like Luther and Melanchthon and the other great reformers of the 16th century. How important were their princes, their regional rulers, to the entire enterprise of the Reformation?
Put it this way, no prince, no Reformation. All you got to do is look at the careers of some of the other reformers, for example, John Wycliffe, who had for a while the support of, I believe, John of Gaunt, who was a prince in England. And when that kind of petered out, so did Wycliffe. He was imprisoned in his own cell and eventually removed from office as professor at Oxford. Or Jan Hus, who had some the princes in Bohemia were interested in a while, and then when they got scared, Hus was left by himself at the Council of Constance and was burned at the stake. Calvin had a similar problem in Geneva. They kind of liked it for a while, and then it got a little hot, so he had to leave. And he went up to Strasbourg, and then when things cooled off, he went back. All this was because of the lack of political support. Now, Luther was very fortunate, and you have to say it's divine guidance, because throughout his life, he had steadfast Lutheran princes. Frederick the Wise, proper title is Frederick the Third Elector of Saxony, was the first of those who accompanied Luther to Diet of Worms. And without Frederick's support and defense of Luther, he would have been burned at the stake, just like Jan Hus.
So we're talking about not only protectors. Were men like Frederick the Wise also patrons of the Reformation?
Well, certainly. Financially, in the things that counted back then, this would not just be dropping a little money in the plate on Sunday. But with the Reformation, the support of Frederick was key, because the prince was understood to be the administrator in the Lutheran Reformation of the property of the church. And so once Frederick accepted that, then the administration of anything that belonged to the church, such as the buildings, their lands, peasantry that worked the lands, schools, charities, all those things were administered by the prince and with his cooperation. And the other side of it is in the Roman Catholic Church, the princes were not involved. This was all done by the bishops, or by the prince bishops, which was a half-breed type of title. And so if you didn't have that type of person who had that sort of control over property and income and the very livelihood of a lot of people, the Reformation of the church just would not have happened.
We don't want to romanticize the men themselves, especially someone like Frederick the Wise. He, in addition to obviously having some appreciation for the Reformation theologically, without a doubt, and I want to talk about that in a minute, also had his own political reasons, purely political reasons, for taking on Emperor Charles V during and the papacy during this time we call the Reformation, didn't he?
That's correct. The at the time that Charles V was elected, prior to that, Frederick was the first candidate, and there was kind of some deal. Well, there definitely was deal making going on behind the scenes with the various princes of the German Empire. And Frederick finally decided to stay with his people and not give up his connection to the people of Saxony. I think that was a political consideration, but also an understanding of his place that God had put him in life. But after Charles was elected, and this was before the Diet of Worms, Frederick III was still, let's say, number two in influence throughout the Roman Empire, and this Reformation thing definitely helped play into Frederick's power and the power of Saxony, which was an electoral state and one of the most powerful states in Europe at the time.
To what degree did Frederick the Wise actually appreciate and understand Luther's theological quest and the general theological direction of the Reformation?
Well, I think he, if you read the letters, the correspondence, the official acts, it's clear that Frederick supported him behind the scenes. He didn't come out publicly in saying, I am a Lutheran. You know, he didn't do that. Our politicians today even do the same. They our politicians, as you note on your show very often, they talk a lot about God and religion, but they're very careful about identifying themselves with a particular version. In the case of Frederick, the only religion that was really recognized of any sort was the Pope's religion. And so if Frederick had come out and say, I'm a Lutheran, we immediately been branded a heretic, and have been divested of title and everything else. So he was very careful about what he said or did publicly. But it's clear behind the scenes that he endorsed everything that Luther proposed. And at the end of his life, Frederick asked to be given the chalice, which is something that only the Lutherans would do. That would be the Lord's Supper, indicating thereby that he was really was a Lutheran. The only thing that you might find some differences between Luther and Frederick is that Frederick was sometimes cautioned Luther to tone down his polemic, which if you read Luther, you might understand why he did that.
We're talking with Dr. Martin Nolan, past president of the Concordia Historical Institute, remembering three saints of old, not so old, but back to the 16th century, the 19th century. The 16th century ruler, Frederick the Wise, we'll talk a little bit more about him on the other side of the break, and then we'll get to the 19th century pastor and missionaries, Friedrich Winneken, and the father of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, perhaps I would say the most influential Lutheran theologian in the entire history of America, C.F.W. Walther. It's Tuesday afternoon, May the 5th. You can give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. You can also email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, what was the most important thing of all the things that Frederick the Wise did do to protect and help and patronize Luther and the Reformation? What was the most important thing that he did in the career of the Reformer? 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, or talkback@issuesetc.org. After our conversation concludes with Dr. Martin Nolan, audio open lines, Bishop Gene Robinson has made some statements, optimistic statements, about same-sex marriage in the country and his church, the Episcopal Church USA. We'll hear those and get your reaction during audio open lines in about 20 minutes. Stay tuned.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with couple if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Stephen Parks, on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church. And I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300. Folks, if you have a question or a comment about these theologians, these leaders, and these reformers of the past, remembering today Frederick the Wise, Friedrich Winneken, or C.F.W. Walther, give us a call. Our phone number, 1-877-623-6943, or send us your email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Marty, one more question on Frederick the Wise before we move on to the two 19th century theologians. What was the most important thing in your estimation that Frederick the Wise did for Luther and for the Reformation?
The most important thing, I would say, is that after the Diet of Worms, probably in private sessions, Frederick the Wise, negotiated with Charles V to delay the Edict of Worms, which would be the rounding up and execution of heretics, and specifically made an exemption for Saxony. So Frederick didn't really care what happened to other territories. I mean, they would have to deal with Charles and the edict themselves. But he, using the fact that Frederick was at the head of the main imperial army and that Charles needed his cooperation to battle the Turks, he got an exemption. So even though the Pope wanted to hunt down the heretics in Saxony and Thuringia, he would not be able to because of the this secret negotiation. And it later was not totally secret, that it came out. And, of course, the Pope and the Vatican were very unhappy with this. And Charles V just did what he did to accomplish his goals politically.
Moving on to the 19th century and the two men we remember today with you, Marty, Friedrich Winnicke and C.F.W. Walther, it is almost considered a truism that Lutherans don't have a missionary past or present. I think that's completely false. But if you want historic evidence for it, wouldn't a man like Friedrich Winnicke be one of the places you'd look first?
Well, that's correct. And actually, although people will say that Walther was the father of the Missouri Synod in some ways, Friedrich Winnicke was, because he was the first of a number of missionaries that came from Germany to serve the German Americans in the American Midwest. Frederick Winnicke was a graduate of Halle, which was the home base of German missions throughout the world in that period of time. And after his education and a little bit of experience over in Germany, he felt the call of God to serve the needs of the German Americans here in the Midwest, and came over and served a while in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Decatur, Indiana, and just found out that there was too many people here that had no pastors, no churches, no schools, and so he went back to Germany for a two-year stint of telling about this need, and the main person he contacted was Wilhelm Lea in Bavaria, and Bavaria was southern Germany. But it still was a place where there were a lot of Lutherans. And then Lea began sending men here to the United States, mostly to Indiana, Michigan, Illinois area. And so these were German missionaries serving the people on the frontier. And Frederick Winnicke was the first of these. And then that batch of guys that came with Winnicke and Lea's direction got together with the people here in Missouri. And that's what started the Missouri Synod. So really, Winnicke and his bunch were here in the United States first. And you could say in that sense that he was the pioneer of the Missouri Synod.
What was the American frontier? I mean, this is helpful for understanding both the missionary life of Winnicke and of Walther. What was the American frontier, basically anything west of the Mississippi at this point, what was that like?
Well, the thing is, when Winnicke came in about 1830, eastern Indiana was the frontier. Really everything was transported by boat. So there were certainly areas along the Ohio River and the Mississippi and Missouri River that were settled. That means there were farmers there, and they had some transportation of their crops. But in terms of a regular, organized settlement, with a town and connections to the eastern United States, eastern Indiana was it. And so Winnicke went to where these settlers were beginning to go into various plots of land. And as he moved west through Indiana and north into Michigan, they were scattered all over the place. They were not close together like you see today's farms. I mean, you'd have to travel 20 miles to find the next farmer. And so this scarcity of population was one of the big problems. So basically, there were circuit rider preachers. Many Methodists were doing this, but then also the German Lutherans. And it was through this circuit riding that is going from one little group of people to the next that the Missouri Synod started in this part of the Midwest. But it was really very primitive. And people would go to a town and buy supplies for several months. It wasn't like going down to the store once a week or something like that. There were no railroads, and horseback or horse and buggy was the only way of transportation besides foot.
Let's talk about C.F.W. Walther then, beginning with his life, not beginning with the beginning of his life, but beginning with his life early on, a college student, and his flirtation, perhaps even more than a flirtation, with this erroneous theological movement we call Pietism.
Walther was born in 1811 and ended up going to the University of Leipzig to study theology in 1829. And he had a nearly fatal lung disease, and it may have been or turned into tuberculosis later in life. And this is something that kind of affected him. He was never very athletic after that. But when he was at the University of Leipzig, he joined a group of students that was led by an older graduate student, and they really got into one of the forms of pietism in which a person's Christianity was judged by how thoroughly they repented of their sins. So if instead of showing off how many good works I could do, let's say, by feeding the poor or doing something like this, these pietists would impress each other by how many sins that they could confess. And how bad they would basically turn themselves into psychological wrecks, because they felt that in order to be under the Spirit of God, they would have to really feel the sorrow for their sin all the time. And so this was the type of pietism that Walther encountered, and it nearly destroyed him, as well as some of the other students. And kind of wandered around for a while until he got a letter from the pastor in Dresden named Martin Steffen. And Steffen quickly figured out what was going on and said, this form of religion is wrong. This is not what the gospel is about. The gospel is about the love of God in Christ Jesus and freedom from the guilt that's associated with sin. And this was, Walther said, it was like the door of heaven opened up, and he saw Jesus in heaven. I mean, he didn't have a vision, but it was, he clearly saw what the Christian religion was all about. And after that, Walther became a great student of Martin Luther, read all the writings that he could of Luther, and it really changed him and made him a different type of Lutheran than what was typical for the day in Germany.
He emigrates because of not only a political but a theological coercion on the part of the Prussian king to the United States. And with this small group that emigrate, what is their biggest problem upon finding a place to live out on the American frontier?
They find a place to live down in south of here in Perry County in Missouri. And that area, by the way, there are some memorial sites that people can go visit, Saxon Luther Memorial, and also in Altenburg, there's the museum there, the Lutheran Heritage Museum. And they started a Lutheran colony and were going along fine for a couple of months until it was found out that their leader, Martin Steffen, was the same guy that sent the wonderful letter to Walther, was accused of having improper relations with a young lady, actually several young ladies, and he was also accused of embezzling funds. After they had a quick trial, they sent Steffen across the river, and then this became somewhat problematic for these people because they hadn't organized their whole church around Steffen, and he had not appointed a successor. Over a period of time, and Walther was down in that area in Perry County, they they were trying to figure out how can we be a Lutheran church and not have a bishop. And Walther did a study back through Martin Luther and the Lutheran confessions and found out, hey, you don't need to have a bishop. In fact, when they started turning over the property and decisions of the church to the princes, that was just an emergency thing anyway. And he found many writings of Luther in which Luther said we don't need to have bishops. We can just gather together in councils. And this then led Walther to say, well, we can have a different type of church, and we are the church ourselves. We don't need a bishop. And that insight was the core of what became the church government structure of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Well, let's talk about that on the other side of the break, because we have a few more minutes with Dr. Martin Nolan on the other side talking about CFW Walther, the third of three we're remembering today, along with the church over the last several days, Frederick the Wise from the 16th century, Friedrich Winneken, and CFW Walther, so-called founder and father of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Dr. Martin Nolan is past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. You can join us, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 5th of May.
When we say Lutheran, we mean Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Each year I present Life Issues Institute's prestigious Hero at Heart Award to individuals who demonstrate outstanding courage or compassion on behalf of innocent human life. This year, I'm giving it to Marianne Glendon, former ambassador to the Vatican. She recently declined Notre Dame's most revered award, the Laetare Medal, which was to be presented to her during the university's May commencement ceremony. She made clear her decision was based on the invitation of pro-abortion President Barack Obama to speak at the commencement, as well as giving him an honorary Doctor of Law degree. Ambassador Glendon has demonstrated courage and grace in declining this honor. She's a fine example of how important it is for all of us to stand up for innocent human life.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
My local Christian bookstore just sells Jesus Schlock. Where can I find good material? We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while uniquely maintaining a relentless focus on the gospel. We believe that these forgotten doctrines and their scriptural emphases can not only enrich individual Christians and revive the church, but also address the deepest needs of our culture. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, available exclusively at NewReformationPress.com. Or the Big Picture audio presentation, Bible in an Hour, by Pastor Wade Butler. Learn the center and scope of redemptive history and scripture in just 1 hour. And of course, be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork as well. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about some of the theological heritage of Lutherans, not only in the 16th century Reformation, but also here in America. That theological heritage and the fruit of that kind of scholarship and serious theological thought is found in the Lutheran Study Bible. It's a new resource from Concordia Publishing House. This is not an ordinary study Bible, and when it calls itself the Lutheran Study Bible, it does so very consciously and very intentionally. The scholarship here is sound and biblical, and that means that it is thoroughly Lutheran. It also has great devotional resources included from all of the centuries of Lutheran theology. You can find out more about the Lutheran Study Bible by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Right there on our home page, you'll find more about the Lutheran Study Bible, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and pre-order your copy of the Lutheran Study Bible. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Study Bible. Marty, you said before the break that once Walther has this realization that bishops are, at least in the structural sense, the hierarchical sense in the church, not necessary as part of the governing structure for the church, he begins to think about this fledgling group of pioneers and immigrants as church. How does he come to that conclusion, having left behind everything he knew to be church?
He ends up going back to Luther, and there are some theologians that believe that they have to reinvent the wheel for their generation. Walther was not one of those. He was accused of being a, quote, repristinating theologian. That is, somebody that was trying to make the Lutheran Church today just like it was in the 16th century. He was accused of that, and in some ways he considered that an honor because he believed that what Luther had discovered was the correct way to read the Bible and the correct way to order the church. So he looked back at Luther's writings, and if you just want a short reading to see where Walther got a lot of his ideas, you should read the Treatise on the Power and Primacy of the Pope, in which it talks about the authority of bishops at the very end. It's the last section. And in there it says that there's no difference between bishops and pastors, except the bishops by custom have been given the right to ordain other pastors. But this is not necessarily something that was required by Christ or the Apostolic Church, and therefore any pastor may ordain another pastor, and you don't need to have the apostolic succession or the hierarchy of bishops or anything like that to have a legitimate church. So that's the main place in which you can see where Walther draws his theoretical basis for the church. And then in terms of, well, how do you do it in America, there he looked at other denominations. He looked at parliamentary structures. He looked at what would just be a practical way of doing it here in America under the separation of church and state. And with a number of years of trying out different things, they came together with something, basically in 1854, that's the same constitution we have in the Missouri Synod today.
Am I right that at one point, perhaps later in his career, that Walther is at the same time president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, president of its seminary, foundling seminary there in St. Louis, and pastor of perhaps as many as six congregations at the same time?
Well, he was pastor of four congregations for sure. I'm not sure, maybe there were two others that were like daughter congregations. And those in St. Louis would be Trinity, which is the original one. That's where he was a member. That's down by the Soulard Market in central St. Louis. Holy Cross, which is in Jefferson Avenue, very close to Concordia Publishing House. And then on the north side would be Emmanuel Lutheran Church and Zion Lutheran Church. And I think most of the two of those, the latter two, may be defunct at this point in history. I mean, 2008, I don't think they're there anymore. But Trinity is still in existence, and regular services, full attendance, and Holy Cross is still in existence. I think both of them have some sort of parochial school. So we still have Walther's churches among us, and the some of his memorabilia, things that are left from his life, will be on display at the new museum at the International Center that should be opening, I believe, in July. It's the Concordia Historical Institute's new museum there, and people can learn more about C.F.W. Walther at that museum when it opens.
Finally, then, what is Walther's greatest contribution, not only to speak parochially of American Lutheranism, but to the Reformation as an ongoing enterprise in general?
In my opinion, I think that his greatest contribution, which even overshadowed his ideas of church polity, was his figuring out a way to combat the influence of pietism in the Lutheran Church. And you can see how he did that in his book called The Proper Distinction Between Law and Gospel. And pietism was the basis of Methodism, and pretty much everything we have in American evangelicalism today. And you really need to have to be able to argue against it on the basis of Scripture, and Walter was able to do that very successfully. So I highly commend that book to anybody that is struggling with a sense of guilt and shame or failure as a Christian if they're a member of any of those churches or under the influence of Pietism.
Dr. Martin Noland is past president of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you for inviting me.